Okay, so I wrote some notes up, and I'm going to share these with you guys. Just some thoughts for us as a team. I just realized I've got 9% left on my tablet, so I pray that it lasts all the way through. Here's just some thoughts that I had written down in regards to, and I just titled it, How to Become a Great Pastor. That's not a very creative title or even an awesome title, but it's just, I guess it was just some thoughts that I jot down. I thought these might be helpful. So, if you're taking notes, which I think you should, just put the first one is come with, I use this term, come with a pre-yes or a predefined yes. That was my first thought. I've got four thoughts for you. So that's the first of the four. Come with a pre-yes. I'll define that and I'll share with you my thoughts. So a pre-yes is the decision that you made when you woke up this morning to be in alignment with God's call on your life. It's the same thing like when you wake up and you know, you chose when you woke up to follow the Lord and, you know, not do partake of the life that you used to partake in before you came to Jesus. Same thing. And it's a choice to align with God's call in your life. And when he calls you to be a part of LFC, like this church, then that means that you're choosing from the moment you wake up to be in alignment with the direction and the vision of the church, because this is where obviously God's called you to serve. So a pre-yes means I may not always agree with everything, but because God's calling me here, I'm putting my yes out there. I think sometimes we mistake or confuse being in alignment and agreeing on everything. Like they're two different things. To count every time that my dad made a decision that I didn't agree with, but I still had to do it, like I could be a millionaire for that, you know? And it's not that he was making bad decisions, it's just we're like two different people, you know? I remember, I think the biggest one that, you know, we all know about is, you know, he wanted the music really, really quiet. And I didn't. And I was in charge of that department. But I still had to do what he said. He and I saw life groups differently. And it wasn't my church. So I had to do it his way. Mm-hmm. There's a decision that we make every single day that says, I'm in alignment. I'm in agreement, and I'm going to throw my yes out there. That doesn't mean that I agree with everything. That doesn't mean I like everything. But what it does mean is that at the end of the day, we're all walking in the same direction, locking arms, saying we're a team. And that decision that we made was our decision, not your decision. And if I were in charge, I'd be doing it differently. That's not alignment. That's out of alignment. My dad would quite often remind me, and Jesse when he was here, and before that it was other people. I remember Shane, we all talked about this, but Luke chapter 16, verse 12, and if you have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who will give you that which is your own? And so you have a personal vision. I also have a personal vision. Even as a lead pastor, I still don't always get to run with my personal vision. Sometimes I'm a steward of this house for the Lord, and sometimes what's in the best interest of the house is not always what I want to do. And so But each one of us, like, we have a personal vision, and there's going to be times, and there are times you've already experienced it, where your personal vision is going this way, and the church vision is going this way. And so in that moment, by just simply the fact that God's called you to this house, the personal vision becomes second, and the church vision comes first. And there's going to become a point, there's going to come a point in time where, you know, maybe the Lord sends you out and you get to go do everything that's like your heart has ever wanted to do. And, you know, I hope that, certainly that's the case, but, you know, there's a responsibility that we collectively as a team have to fulfill the vision that God has for this house, which means we all have to lay our personal vision down before the Lord and say, God, like, I'm serving this house first. I'm serving me second. And so if you've not been faithful which is another man's, then who's going to give you what's your own? I think sometimes we actually risk prolonging the coming of our own vision simply by, you know, our unwillingness to submit to another person's vision. And, you know, in my case, you know, it was my dad. I had to submit to him and for a lot of years, and it was hard. It's not easy. So let's clarify. We're not talking about yes men, because I think sometimes when we talk about loyalty, and we're going to do a whole series on this actually starting next month, but I think sometimes when we talk about loyalty, we confuse loyalty and being a yes man, because sometimes it sounds the same. Sometimes that whole, like, hey, I want a predefined yes, or, you know, I want, let's all just be in agreement. You know, it kind of sounds like, well, okay, so you just want everybody to say yes and not really, you know, have their own opinion. It kind of sounds that way, but the difference is a loyalty has to do with the Spirit. And so you can't, there's two things you can do. You can be loyal and go with it. Like, you can say, I don't necessarily agree with it, but we're locking arms, so we're in this. Or you can, I said two, there's three. Or you can say, hey, I'm going to go with it, but I'm going to gossip about it, like, the whole way, right? Like, I am not into this. This is wrong, you know, and I've done this. I'm sorry to admit that, but, you know, I've done this before. You know, like, the whole, like, sitting, you know, in the living room with your friend or at the coffee shop with your friend, you know, I can't believe my pastor's doing this. And boy, I tell you, if I wouldn't do it that way. And boy, he's gonna, when that comes, it's gonna railroad him and he'll see how right I was, you know. Yeah, that's not good. The third is, and this can be really hard, but you can walk away and still be loyal. Like, you can leave a church, you can leave a team, and still have a loyal spirit. And what that looks like is you make things right. You know, you clean up all of those, you know, if there's any burnt bridges. But when you walk away, you still speak well, you still speak highly, and you still honor them as if, you know, that team that you left was, you know, was a David, you know, and that's true loyalty. When loyalty is tested the most, when the vision of the house and the personal vision come to an intersection and you have to choose, that's when loyalty is not really tested when everything's going well, because that's just everything going well, you know, doesn't really take much work to be on page there and to have a good heart there. So the first thing is being a yes man, generally you're going along with the plan with maybe a predefined yes, even though you disagree, but it's for the purpose of personal gain. It's so that, you know, so I want that promotion, so I'm going to say yes. I want that, you know, I want a raise, so I'm going to say yes, or, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much personal gain. Loyalty doesn't have the personal gain piece attached to it. It just has, we're a team. We're in one spirit. We're in this for the Lord. We're in this to reach our region for Jesus. And so that's number one. Does that kind of make sense to you guys? So number two is, I put in here, this kind of sounds mean when I say it this way, but this is just what I wrote. I was just jotting notes down. Think for yourself. generally, when we say that, we're not saying anything nice. But let me clarify, and then maybe it'll sound better. okay. So three things that you should be able to do in your sleep. Okay. As a pastor, there are three things that we all should be able to do in our sleep. And you know these. We talked about these at last ACPT. Invite people to Jesus, connect people to groups, and equip people to lead. Right? Those are what we called in our last ACPT. We talked about those as the three strategic anchors, and I gave you a printout of that, so hopefully you still have it.
Apparently,
y'all doesn't. I think I wrote it on my phone. I don't have the paper anymore.
You know, here's what I did.
Okay, good.
You always get it.
What I did with mine. I stuck it in a picture frame. That way I wouldn't, like, lose it. So if you need a picture frame, we probably got one laying around the office. In my book, this is just notes that I jotted down. In my book, wake up, brush your teeth, do your devotions, kiss your wife and kids, or spouse and kids, or the mirror. And
or what?
I said, or the mirror, you know, if you're not married. And then do the strategic anchors. Like, this is like what we do. We're pastors, right? This isn't just, you know, this is not just what we do. This is who we are. Like, we live to invite people to Jesus. We live to connect people. Like, I've got a community for you to belong to. I just was telling this guy that I'm doing the Purple Book with, and I said, what we're doing today, like, this happens all over our region every day of the week. And he was blown away. He's like, really? And, you know, because, I mean, he came from the Catholic Church.
Well, he's not going to church right now.
He's not going to church at all, but he came from the Catholic Church as a kid, you know. Mm. You just kind of go on Sunday and you do your little, you know, holy water thing and Hail Mary, da-da. And I was like, no, like, this is literally a relationship. So let me make it real clear. You're a pastor, which means when we say assimilation, okay, assimilation ain't done until one of two things happen. Until they leave the church or until they die. That's when assimilation's done. In other words, you're not seeing them anymore, right? They're not in your life anymore. Oftentimes we think of assimilation as like if you're, and I know Randy, I don't think you do this part in Rock because, you don't lead like a group gathering, but just lean into this anyways because I think you know.
Maybe you will
someday, and this will mean something to you. Okay, but sometimes we think of assimilation as that box that we check, or like, hey, okay, I marked it in Rock, or hey, I completed, like, I sent those letters out, or okay, I got them in a Purple Book, you know. So like, and we think, you know, they did all in, okay, like assimilated. They're in a group. They're assimilated. But assimilation goes so much further. Like, I would say, for me personally, I'm not done assimilating you guys. Because God still has a next for you. And as your pastor, I'm a part of your story. If I drop the ball now, then I'm going to stand before God someday and he's going to be like, Aaron, like, I wasn't done with Drex yet. Like, why'd you stop? And so, you know, just like recently, Stella and I did, it was actually very, very good. I think it was actually probably one of the better ones, because we've done this before, but one of the better ones we had, there's a girl who left the church, is going to New Hope. And so Stella actually started the conversation. She reached out to her. And sometimes it doesn't go this well. Like, I tried to do this with another couple 4 months ago or so, and they just totally ghosted me. And I actually saw them at a restaurant a while ago. They literally walked in, and they was like, hey, and they walked out.
I gave like, her a hug.
I was like, well, that was awkward. You know? Like, I don't know what I did, but, you know, clearly.
I think they just.
Did
awkward.
Something. But anyways, so we met up and we said, hey, just wanted to connect with you. You know, you're not going to, oh yeah, I'm going to New Hope. Awesome. And I could tell, you know, a little standoffish, you know, like, and, you know, finally it's like, you know, we're doing this because we want to pastor you well, because we actually love you and still care about you and want to make sure before you start this new season that there's no water under the bridge from the old season. And so, you know, oh, yeah, nothing. Okay, well, you know, what led you to this decision? Oh, well, I just needed this and needed that. And awesome. We're so excited that you found that there. How can we pray for you? You know, so like, so here's what it is. Mm-hmm. Everything about that relationship, it, tenacity, all the way to the end. There's literally nothing more I can do without basically undermining Chris Hankel and pastoring somebody that's in his congregation now. Mm-hmm. You know, so like we completed it. So mm-hmm. assimilation
is open for relationship, and even if she wants to come back at one point or another, so there's no barriers.
Mm-hmm.
So when we think about assimilation, we think no stone left unturned. After the letter sent out, salvation letter, or a first visit letter, then what? These are questions you can ask. After the purple book, they're in a purple book, then what? Like, the question then is like, okay, who are you going to lead? Now that you've done the purple book, now you go take somebody through the purple book. Mm-hmm. That's how that's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. That's how that's meant to be. It's not just, okay, I finished my Bible study. It's like, no, I'm not turning you into a fatter Christian. I'm turning you into a stronger Christian, which means now you need to go take somebody through a purple book and let them experience the same life-changing power that you experienced, but God's going to use you to do it. After they're in a group, then what? We look for them on Sunday. We text them during the week. We ask them, do you know Jesus? Did you do all in? Have you been baptized? Do you serve in a team somewhere? Are you part of a group somewhere? Like, what's your next step with Jesus? What's the call that God has on your life? Have you considered leadership? I mean, guys, the choices that people have, the choices that people have that we can be a part of are endless. And so often we think of assimilation as just like, you know, I check the box. But there's really so much more. So here's a question for you to be asking yourself. Is there someone that's in the demographic of your ministry, right? Like young adults, men's ministry, women's ministry, kids ministry, the, you know, all the different ministries that we have. Is there somebody that's in the demographic of your ministry, and but yet you don't see them at the gathering that you hold? So, okay, so like, look at that face. I haven't seen them in a month, or I've seen them never, but I see them come on Sunday. Or I see them go to, like, I see a young teen that goes to Bloom and Grow. I don't know if any teens do, but I'm just picking on something. Yeah, a young teen that goes to Bloom and Grow, but I don't see them at youth group. Or I see a teen on Sunday, but they don't go to Wednesday. Or, you know, I see a young adult on Sunday, but they don't go, you know, to a, one of the young adult, like, yeah, these are all the things that I'm thinking of, or a kid who goes to into Sunday and sits with their parents but doesn't go into kids' church, you know, all these different things. So I don't see them in my gathering. So if we don't know why, and if we can't figure out how to get past that why, that's our responsibility, right? And let me just make that point just a little bit finer. You're my extension to those people. Like, I can't personally pastor, you know, 500 people. That's why you're on staff. And so you're my remote control, you're my extension out there to those demographics, which means that you should be asking those questions. You should be getting the answer to those questions. And if you don't have the answer to those questions, you need to get the answer to those questions, right? Because I'm responsible at the end of the day. I'm responsible before the Lord for all those people. And you're, by extension, you're responsible to the Lord for all of those people. You know, so like, so imagine, you know, imagine standing before the Lord and God says, like, you know, that person was in your life. Like, you know, why didn't they come to Jesus? Well, they never came to my gathering. And he's like, well, yeah, I know. That's just like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, why didn't you go get them? And so people don't just come to gatherings. We have to go get them. We have to go chase them down. Most people are just waiting to be invited. And that's why Jesus told his disciples, you're fishers of men. Now, I know there's that funny YouTube video with a fish jump in the boat. But can I tell you guys, like, these kind of fish don't jump in the boat. Like, you got to get your... You got to get your... fishing line out there. You got to go. He didn't say, you know, you're catchers of men. He said you're fishers of men. Mm-hmm. Right? So we're not like, you're not even like holding our net out there. You know, it's like, man, we got to load that hook up with a lot of bait.
Just get some dynamite.
And we got to go. We got to go throw that out there, and we got to go catch them. So you may have to morph your department to figure out how to reach people. You may have to change the way that you're doing things, maybe even a dozen times, to figure out, like, how many times have we changed what we do? You know, I mean, we're always changing. And why are we always changing? I've said it 100 times. We don't change for change's sake. We change for vision's sake.
Yeah.
We got to do what we got to do to reach people. But I know there's people that come on Sunday that aren't going to other gatherings, and I think that we should figure out why. I think that we should know the answer to that question. Maybe it's a good reason. Maybe it's like, well, I work, or I can, you know, I can't come to that because I got kids, or I, you know, can't do this or that. Whatever, you know, like, I don't, you know, my kid doesn't go in there because he's got, you know, I don't know, some he's on the spectrum or something, and it doesn't work, you know, like that. Okay, that's fine. Like, at least you know. Right? But I think we need to be able at the end of the day to take a look at the crowd and say, I'm still working. I'm working as hard as I am to reach that person, to reach that person, to reach that person, and leaving no stone unturned. It's not, this is what I wrote. I said, it's not about how stupid you look or how annoying change is, or even who was right and who was wrong. Because we all know that sometimes we don't want to change just because we know that if we do, it's going to prove that that person was right and I was wrong. I'm just human enough to feel that way sometimes. But it's about the people. It's about the people who are out there. And if the church is growing, so your department should be growing. Mm-hmm. That's just obvious, right? Like, as the church grows, every department grows. So your department is growing, but it's not going to happen on accident. And people aren't going to jump into your boat. And they're not going to jump into your net. You got to go get them. Is this helping at all? Hopefully this is pouring into you guys. That's what I want to do. That's what I desire to do. Nonetheless, the next one. Your success as a pastor hinges on 4 relationships. 1. Your relationship with God. That's number 1. You won't be able to be successful in anything, even your personal life, if your relationship with God isn't solid. If your relationship with God, let me just finish these up. Okay, your relationship with God, your relationship with your family, and your relationship with Stella and I, and your relationship with your team. Your relationship with God, if if you're inconsistent with your prayer, Bible reading, worship, meditation, those things, everything about what you're doing ministry wise is just going to be like gears with no oil.
What was it for?
Team. Your team, yeah. If you're, I can tell you from experience, between 1 and 4, these all go in order. That you can't put, like, you know, 4 in number 2 spot, or number 2 spot and number 3 spot, or number 1 spot. Like, these, this is the order in which things work. If you and God aren't in sync, then you and your wife aren't going to be in sync. And if you and your wife aren't in sync, we aren't going to be in sync. And if we aren't in sync,
your team's
going to
know it.
If we aren't in sync, your team's going to definitely feel it, right? So these all trickle down. These all go in order. You can't mess up the order. But Stella and I are giving you guys, hopefully, and if we're not, please let us know, but we are desiring to and want to and are doing our best to give you all the tools that you need to build and to lead effectively, to do what you need to do effectively. Including adding people to the church. You know, I mean, we're out there talking to people about Jesus and inviting them to church, and the church is growing. Here's just a couple statistics for you, from C. Peter Wagner, Lyle Schaller, Larry, somebody, and some other. I read these books. I can't always remember the names of the authors, but. One of them's up there, leading and managing the larger church or something like that. I can't remember. Anyways, 4 books. They all say the same thing, and all written back in the 80s. Its principles just stay the same. So the average staff pastor. Okay, so not lay pastor, but a staff pastor. Average staff pastor can lead up to 200 people on their own, if you have the right team. If you have your team built correctly,
that's high.
Because you're delegating your leadership out. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're pastoring your team.
What is it just for one person?
About 10.
50. Pastor, one pastor.
I'll get there in just a second. But the average, like you as a pastor, are pastoring a team of people. Those teams are laity, right? So they're not a lay pastor, they're just lay people in the church. So most of those people are going to have jobs, they're going to have other things they're doing. So their capacity is going to be smaller, all right? But you can manage, you know, as a single person around like 50 people. The average lay pastor can lead up to 80 people, okay? A lot of lay pastors are maybe retired or single and have a lot of time on their hands, or they're, you know, like Jessica, married but stays home with kids, you know, so they have some margin in their life to pastor, and so they can have a team. Like, I think, how many does Jessica have? I can't remember.
It's like probably 50-60 that don't attend every week.
No, like leaders under her.
Oh, leaders?
Like 10, 12.
Yeah, 10.
And then yeah. She's got her table leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then that adds another.
So, and I've, 15, you know, I peek in sometimes. 15, I peek in sometimes, you know, early to bloom and grow and kind of see how things are going, and she's doing a great job. Mm-hmm. So the average lay pastor can lead around 80 people.
But that's with a team.
With the team. And that's what I'm saying. Like, we're giving you guys people, and mm-hmm. we're feeding leaders your way. You're developing those leaders. So this is your capacity, okay? And I think we could probably, even if we did a really good job, how fun would it be to, like, break those numbers and, like, you know, prove, hey, you said we can do more than that. But but that's the average, okay? So how do we do that? And here's 5 things that I wrote down, taken out of Matthew chapter 14. This is the feeding of the 5,000. I'm not going to read it all to you, because we know it. We teach it. But But there's some unique things that happened in the feeding of the 5,000, because the feeding of the 5,000 is a story of multiplication, which is what Jesus said the church should do, and it's what Acts did in the book of Acts. You know, it says the church didn't just grow, the church multiplied, the church, it exploded, yeah, is what happened. And so one is take ownership of it. In verse 18 of Matthew 14, you know, these loaves and fishes were brought, and Jesus said, bring them here to me, because they're like, well, what are we going to do with this? Like, this is no good. Like, you know, and sometimes this is what happens to us. You know, we see leaders or we see people in church like, I can't build anything out of that. Mm-hmm. And the Lord, I felt that way so many times. And I felt that way in Portland at the house church. I'm like, what do I do with this? You know, like, these people just want to smoke pot and call themselves Christians. You know, like, what do I do with this, you know? Or are these people, they just, you know... You know, everybody thought we were a house church, you know? And so it's like we're not a house church. Like, we're trying to grow the church. And, you know, they wanted a house church. They want something small. So I'm talking about church growth, and they're like, no, we don't want to love it the way it is. And I'm like, no, we're supposed to grow. You know, like, I don't want to drive for Uber the rest of my life, you know? Like, I want to take a salary from the church so I can actually pastor this thing, you know? Oh, and it was frustrating, you know? And I remember... I don't know who said it, but they said, God has placed everything that your church, might have been Pastor Frank maybe, everything that your church needs for growth is already in it. Mm-hmm. Just feed it. Just work with people. Work with them where they're at. So verse 18 is bring it here. Okay? You know, like, just bring it here. He's like, disciples, just bring me that stuff. Let me have it. So he took ownership over it. Jesus did. Number two, in verse 19, he said, he blessed it. He gave thanks and broke it. And I love in some of the movies, you know, I think all of them, you know, they like show Jesus like raising it up to heaven, you know, praying over it. And he blessed it. So take ownership of your area, of your leaders and the people, and then just pray a blessing over it. Just all the time. And I think I told Darcy this the other day. You know, you're like, lay hands on your people. Like, prophesy over them. Speak into them. Like, take some time on your own. Get a word for them. Like, this is what God's doing. It was so awesome. Like, when Anna was here for Timothy training, like, every week we're, like, praying for Tony. Just mm-hmm. a few weeks ago, we gave his life to Christ. Like, really? So cool, yeah, to be a part of that journey, you know? And we're all a part of that journey. We all are. But, so bless it. And number three, equip your people. Equip your people. Verse 19. And the disciples gave them the loaves and the fishes to the people. Can I be honest? If Jesus were most pastors, he would have been trying to hand out loaves and fishes to 5,000 people on his own. That's how most pastors lead. Mm-hmm. But Jesus, what did he do? He owned it, he blessed it, and then he had his disciples, his pastors, doing the work, his leaders doing the work. So he equipped people to go do the work. Ephesians 4, 11 and 12. Equipping the saints for the work of the ministry. Number four, he gave it away. Verse 19. Then he gave them to the disciples. Okay, that kind of ties in to point number three. But he gave it away. And he just go take it. And so often, you know, it's... And I understand, you know, like, we're building something, and so we've got to have a measure of, like, leading and directing, but sometimes we, you know, sometimes we just have a hard time, like, if somebody can do something with 70% of the quality of the that you can do it, but they can do it with momentum, then give it away. And I'll share with you why here in just a second. And then five, pastor them. He had compassion on them and he healed their sick. Have compassion. love people, pastor people, shepherd people, the more you will release ministry, the more you will equip and release people, the more you'll be free to pastor them. And I know that's why you're on this team. It's because you want to pastor people. At the end of the day, there's probably some of you, and some of us that, like, you may not even totally be jazzed about leading a team. You know, you may, like, I came on this team, I just want to pastor people. Well, the two go hand in hand, because if you don't have a team, you'll never have time to pastor people. But if you'll build a team, you'll have time to pastor people, you know? So right now, across the whole pastoral team, the average is 56 people per pastor. And that's actually pretty good. That's not a bad average. 56 people average per pastor. That's 450 people split up between 9 pastors, if I counted correctly. So, but here's a funny thing. I actually taught this at MIP, and it was fun kind of watching people figure it out. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. It's a little bit of math, and I need a whiteboard, and I don't have the whiteboard out and all that. But 56 people, I'll tell you how to get to 60 people. Like that, okay? And it's really simple. Allow someone who's not serving in your department to serve in your department. It's that simple. 4 people will come and watch them. 4 people will come and watch them serve. And here's the fun thing about it. Billy Graham, I think we all love Billy Graham, right? He taught on this. Lyle Schaller teaches on it. C. Peter Wagner teaches on it. He's from Fuller Theological Seminary. Teaches their missions and church planning course. But our own statistics from 2022, 2023, and 2024 also support. Every time we add someone to the Dream Team, 4 people get added to the church.
Yeah, wow. I'm just thinking, I just added Grace to the worship team. Her mom, her brother, her dad was the 4th one. I don't know, but they just started coming. It's like crazy.
So maybe, you know, maybe God's doing something. We'll all get to heaven. We'll be like, Lord, why does that work? He's like, well, you know, in the kingdom dynamics, you know, I don't know. But, and we could go, what I did with the MIP was really fun. I brought in like the national average of, you know, giving per week. And I was like, if you'll add this person and that person adds this person, you know, and, you know, like, and so I had this whole math. If you add this many people to the church, you'll find your way on staff. Because there was a bunch of laity except for KK, and they all wanted to be on staff. I was like, well, you can find your way on staff, you know. Here's how you do it. Go build a team. And it was kind of fun. They were like, wait, what? It was run me through that again? It's like they all wanted to be full-time, you know. Mm-hmm. But it works. And it has worked. And it's worked for us in the past. So, let's see, here's something to think about. And then I got a homework assignment for you. But those people are already here. Mm-hmm. They're already here. There are over 4,000 people in our database. Not all of them have contacts. A lot of them do. A whole lot of them do. So you can go right now, you can go into Rock and run a report or a data view or however Stella you have them do that. I don't know. But I ran data views last night. There's 180 teenagers with a cell phone. Now, I only ran these numbers on people who have cell phones. I didn't worry about email. Cell phone only, which means we can contact them today. 180 teenagers that have a cell phone attached. 217 young adults that have a cell phone attached. 648 women with a cell phone attached. 421 men with a cell phone attached. 71 children between ages 0 and 5 who we have their parents' phone number. 97 kids between ages 6 and 12 we have their parents' phone number. So the people are here, right? Because we know that, you know, like, we don't have, you know, these are a lot more numbers. Like, this is over 1,000, 1,200, 1,400.
Well, some of them probably overlap.
You know, like, there's a lot of people in here that we could reach out to. So, here's the homework assignment. It's simply this. We're going to do what Jesus would do, okay? So, just get in there and print it out. Print it on paper or screenshot it or whatever your preferred method is. But the idea is that start praying over them. Now, give me one second. I'll get you in just a second. You might think, like, that sounds like a lot of work. I pray over 100 names every day. And I name them name by name. Lord, I'm praying for... it's like a bunch of them are right here. Lord, I pray for Barbara. I pray for Barbara's daughter, son-in-law, and grandkids. Lord, I pray for Emmanuel and Samantha. And I pray for Javier and Daisy. And I pray for Aaron and Sarah and Victor and Bob. And, you know, I got people down at Starbucks that I'm praying for. And, you know, old LFC people who have, you know, deconstructed or walked away from their faith. Or, you know, it's a little over 100 people that I pray for every day. And it takes time. It takes me like probably a good 5 to 10 minutes to say all their names. And I don't pray for, like, Lord, I'm praying for Emmanuel and Sarah, or Emmanuel and Samantha, and Lord, I'm just praying that you do this and do that, and Lord, I pray for... No, I just go through, Lord, and I say them one after another, you know. Because otherwise, I might be there for an hour praying for all of them, you know. And really what matters, like, God already knows their names, but it's for me. It's so that I don't forget them. It's so that I'm crying out to God for these people. So print out and then just start praying for them. Just say their name. And, you know, I would encourage you actually to get your team involved. Like, obviously don't give your team sensitive information like cell phone numbers and stuff like that. But you could do names, totally. Absolutely. I prayed from the platform. It's actually kind of funny. Because Reed and Shelly are right over here, and I've been praying for them for a long time.
He's the manager and of this development right here.
Yeah, he manages Monta Vista. And,
actually, all the Monta Vistas, right?
Yeah, all of them. He's the, like, he leads the development crews on building all the neighborhoods and stuff. And so I was, like, talking about sharing your faith on a Sunday. And I said, okay, everybody, like, stand to your feet. Let's start praying over those people that are in our life. I said, pray out. Let's say their names out loud. And so I didn't realize I was in the microphone, but I apparently said Reed and Shelley's name. And Whitney is a relative, and she comes to church. I didn't know it. And I met her one day. She's like, yes, I am related to them. And she's like, you know, a few months ago you were preaching, and you prayed for them in the microphone. And I was like thinking, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, you know, they're gonna kill me. She said, I went over and I told them, I said, that pastor's praying for you, and he prayed for you in church today. And she said they started weeping.
Aww.
And so, like, it, I'm telling you guys, this works. Start praying for people, but know who you're praying for and say them by name. Develop a communication strategy, like, over the next couple days. Like, find a way. Like, if they're already on WhatsApp, like, maybe tag them, or a text. Or if you got a lot, like, if there's like a, you know, 100 or a couple hundred of them, like, send a group text, like, through Rock or something. But find a way to communicate, and then keep communicating. Keep it up. We have people who come back sometimes a year later.
Yeah. Sometimes they're deactivated in Rock because we just didn't have any activity, and they'll come back, and Melissa's like, we just got to reactivate this person. I'm not going to make a new person.
Mm-hmm.
They're just in there, but they came back because, we send text, email, whatever.
I talked to Levi Hayden, has not been at the church in over a year. He works for Shelco. I had to have him come out the other day. And he said, yeah, I haven't been. I'm like, well, I thought you were going to HCC. No. No. I'm like, we're going nowhere. It's like, but I still get the text. Thank you so much. I love seeing the text.
I know.
I'm like, still curious how many people are still subscribed and they're not like, they're not coming to church.
Yeah,
it's because it's they crazy. Know they should be, but there's, so we gotta pray them through.
It's their comfort. I'm a perk.
Your department. Yeah, it's like, I'm not, I haven't left. I still haven't left the church.
I still know what's going on.
I haven't gone in a year, but I still haven't left, you know. But your department, let me say, guys, I want to talk about the word growing. I don't want you to think that this is just about, you know, butts in a seat. That's not what I'm talking about.
No.
I'm talking about people who are disconnected. And if we don't reconnect them, we can't guarantee we're going to see them in eternity. So let's just make this a little bit more impactful here. I'm not talking church growth for butts and numbers. I'm talking about saving people. I'm talking about advancing the kingdom of God. I'm talking about we're going to get on the other side of eternity and they're going to say, thank you so much for being so persistent. Thank you for calling me out, you know. Thank you for calling me on the phone or mentioning me in WhatsApp or sending me a text message or stopping by my house. So, you know, do it, but utilize your team to be a part of it. Yeah, and somehow empower them. You know, maybe give them a few names. Say, hey, these people are already in WhatsApp. They haven't replied in a while. You know, why don't you just, you know, reach out to them and tag them in the next post or whatever, or give them a phone call or you know, whatever. Like, just use your team. LFC has a 1-year follow-up strategy that Stella put together and we use for the main church. And I think it works. And if you're not utilizing it, Stella would be more than happy to show you how. But here's the thing. Don't stop praying for them. Don't stop reaching out. Don't stop staying in touch with them until you know they're either connected or at another church. And it might take a while.
Or dead.
Yeah. So, I got just a... the last one's carry a burden. But here's... When we're talking about carrying a burden, it's talk about church ownership. Like, own it. Like, this is yours. Here's just some thoughts and questions that I wrote down, and then we can take maybe 3 to 5 minutes and answer some questions or thoughts or whatever. But who did you not... Who? Wow, okay. I just typed that incorrectly. But who did not show up last week that you're concerned about? Now, what I did is I wrote these out, and these are things that go through my mind. I was thinking the other day, I was like, I was thinking of you guys. I was like, if Audrey, if Drex, if Randy, if Darcy, KK, you know, whoever, like, on the pastoral team, if they were the lead pastor of this church, how would they need to think? You know, like, how would, if they were in my shoes, what would I expect? And so here's what I want you to think of. Who did not show up last week that you're concerned about? And the answer is, you know, just like, what are you doing about it? Okay, that's to each one of these, like, what are you doing about it? You know, because we all know that there's times where, like, we don't see and we don't do anything about it, but we should. So, who have you not seen for 3 weeks that's on your radar? That's me. Like, if it's 3 weeks, they show up on my radar. If it's 2 weeks, I'm like, maybe they're sick, maybe they're on vacation, maybe they went out of town. 3 weeks, I'm like, I'm gonna send you a text, or I'm gonna call you, or I'll find out, or sometimes ask Darcy because Darcy knows everybody.
Nothing happens about Darcy's knowledge.
She'd be like, "Oh, actually, they're in Dubai, visiting the tallest building in the world. I just heard they bungee jumped from the top, you know."
But lying, I'm gonna bring it back.
Put it in space.
Here's one. Who attends less than 4 times in a 16-week period and you're wondering, are they going somewhere else or are they just wandering away from God and church? Mm. And there's actually a report. You can run it.
Done.
You can run a report. Who attends your group less than one time or one time a month or less. Like you can run that report. And
just to switch the age group if you want a certain age group. But.
Stella can show you how to do that. Yeah. You'll be blown away. You'll be like, oh, you're right. I haven't seen that person in a while. And who did you see last Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, that had a strange spirit about them, and now you need to go catch up with them? And sometimes we don't realize it until we think that question. But you're like, you know what? They did seem kind of off. They were kind of like, it was kind of weird. You're like, what's up with that?
I have a list in Asana of like people to connect with that I have that exact question like in my mind about. Like they seem off, and I have probably 6 or 7. I'm slowly working through them. But it's amazing because you think that, and then you forget, and it's like, oh. And so I go through this list like every week. I'm okay. Can I connect with some of these this week? Do we have time for lunch or dinner? Or
now the truth is. And this is why teams are so important. Sorry, I know I always talk about it, but it's just the only way to effectively do what we're doing. You can only do this with about maybe 50 people. So that's why this is so important. So I'll get through these and then, but really, you need to think like this all the time. But you also need to teach your team leads and people on your team to think like this. Because if you all thought like this, then the church would be a whole lot more connected. Who seems to be stubbornly remaining disconnected from a group? And you're strategizing, how in the world am I going to get that person in a group? Right? Like, there are those people. Like, I'm sure Drex, you've probably got a whole handful of older men in your church that are sitting in that boat. Like, how in the world do I get these people more connected into a group? I think we're actually starting to make some progress on that one.
I had Darcy call them all. We're working through them. All the bench warmers.
Who do you know that's not obeying God and generosity? That'd be tithe and offerings, missions, etc. And you're burdened for their faith. And then the last one, who is it that you know is destined for the next team lead role, but you know they still have to pray them past some things, and you have to pray them into their next step? These are people, this is what I wrote down, I think this is so powerful, these are people that make us great pastors. Mm-hmm. They teach us to look at the ministry more critically, to strategize harder, to pray more bold, fast more frequently, and lean into confrontation with faith. These are the people that frustrate us today, but we're thankful for next year. Okay, yeah. So own the ministry, carry the load, pray late into the night, fast for success, make your heart available for God's burden. These are the ones that God sent you here for. Never become satisfied with the fish that jump in the boat. We're fishers of men, not catchers of men. So.